Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we turn our attention away from the candidates for Spokane City office, whom we've been interviewing for the last 5 weeks. Their names will appear on Washington's August 6th primary election ballot, as will those of hundreds of other candidates running for office in towns, cities, and special taxing and public districts around the state. We focus now on a ballot measure submitted by the Spokane County Library District. The district wants to adjust the level of the property tax levy that provides most of its funding. The district operates 11 libraries outside of the cities of Spokane and Liberty Lake, including two in Spokane Valley and one each in Airway Heights, Cheney, Medical Lake, and Deer Park. Patrick Rowey is the district's executive director.
We are funded through property taxes. It's a dedicated property tax to the property holders of our service area. That's our main source of funding.
So you're not funded out of anybody's general fund. You've got your own funding source.
We provide library services to the city of Airway Heights via contract. So the city of Airway Heights pays for library services through their general fund. But otherwise, yeah, it's a direct tax from the property owners.
So what does this particular ballot measure say with regard to the property tax?
So right now, our property tax rate is at 43 cents per $1,000 assessed valuation right now. And we're asking the voters to restore it to 50 cents per $1,000, so about a 7-cent increase.
So the word restore means it was once 50 cents?
Right. It was 50 cents as recently as 2015. But the way that state tax law operates is that it experiences a gradual decline depending on what the market forces are. So we're at a point now where we're needing to restore that back up to be able to maintain current levels of services and avoid any kind of reductions in services or locations or people.
So state law allows you to impose a 1% increase every year. And so you've lost, essentially in the last 4 or 5 years, you've lost that amount of taxing power.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good way to kind of frame it. The law itself is there's a lot of layers to it. But in order to maintain that 1% cap, our rate will go down to just, yeah.
So as you've lost some of that taxing, has it affected the way you've been able to provide service to your patrons?
Not yet. And we're endeavoring to get out ahead of that. So we're not at a fiscal crisis or anything like that at the moment. But sort of in terms of our financial planning to the future, we've done a financial forecast, kind of evaluated where we're headed. And at the point now, we want to restore that rate up to its maximum to avoid any decline in services or reductions.
Let me take a step back. Do you periodically have to go to the voters to say, can we continue to tax you, or is your taxing authority a permanent taxing authority?
It's permanent, subject to that 1% cap and the rate decline. The last levied lid lift increase the district went out to the voters for was in 2010. So it's been about 9 years or so since the last one. So it's always just a need-based, based again about the financial forecasting evaluation. But it does happen. We do return to the voters on occasion. This will be only the third time in the last 12 years or so.
So in terms of the extra money, if the voters say yes to this, how does that affect the way you do business?
So the main thrust of it is just to keep doing what we're doing. So maintaining current levels of library services, in all of our libraries and both on our digital platforms as well. And additionally, we've identified after a facility review, we've got some infrastructure needs for our building, such as replacing some HVAC systems, things like that. Not particularly flashy, but important to the comfort for customers and efficient running of our buildings. We're looking to do some security upgrades to our libraries, not in response to any real identified need, but we're at the point where we feel it'd be good to have, say, security cameras in our entryways and our parking lots. We want to switch to a keyless entry system for both staff and public, so make sure our facilities are safe and welcoming for folks. Also looking to expand our mobile outreach services, mobile library services. So right now we do story times to area daycares and child centers. We do bring materials to local adult homes and things like that. We want to kind of increase the amount that we can do that, as well as introduce some new opportunities, like things like bringing technological training experiences for things like virtual reality and things like that to kind of the farther flung corners of the district, because we serve such a wide geographic area. We have about 1,700 square miles in our service area. So we want to kind of bring those opportunities for that high-end technological learning to those places that don't have easy access to it as well.
So if we look back a generation, how has the library business changed in terms of the services that libraries provide to the public?
Sure. We like to say our product has always been knowledge, but the format, the platform in which that knowledge has been delivered is changed drastically. So, it's still a core service of the books to check out, things like that. But that knowledge we provide is sort of, we like to say, platform agnostic. It can occur Certainly via a book or a movie or a CD, physically you check out, but it can via our digital platforms. You can learn a new language. You can get online live homework help. You can do all those other things through a variety of platforms, both in the physical space and digital. And we also have a really robust sort of on-site, learning opportunities from the kids, little kids, from babies on up, for story times, which are about kind of introducing those early learning, early literacy concepts to get kids ready for kindergarten, all the way to this summer. We actually have some blacksmithing classes you can sign up for at our North Spokane Library and in the parking lot, of course, and learn hands-on how to handle that hammer and that anvil. So we try to be really comprehensive in those learning opportunities we provide in ways that respond to the needs and interests of our customers.
So as we do more stories about homelessness, we find out that libraries are places where homeless people, where families who don't have any place else to go, they're more community centers than really libraries. Do you see the same in your situation?
Not probably to the breadth and depth that urban libraries do. We certainly endeavor to serve folks of all the circumstances. The library is a welcoming place for everyone. We have expectations for kind of behavior and conduct while you're here, but some of the issues that maybe some of the city libraries are going to think is that we don't quite see out here because we serve the suburban and rural areas, so it's a little different. We've been proactive with our staff. We've had training on engaging the homeless population. We've had training on sort of de-escalation and working with folks, who might be in struggling or in crisis, So we've planned well for it. We got our staff trained for it, but it's not really quite the issue for us as other places, though.
So how have your numbers in terms of the numbers of patrons that you work with every day, are your numbers going up?
We're seeing kind of modest growth. Last year in 2018, we had 1.3 million people come through our doors. That's at 11 locations. We circulated 2.3 million items. There's been a sense that, kind of libraries with the rise of the internet or Google, things like that, have maybe suffered. And we really haven't seen that decline. We see some modest growth in areas like circulation or in program attendance. We like to think we're kind of a robust, strong library system that's really sustained usage throughout the years.
So what happens if voters say no in August?
Well, we kind of switched to planning mode for an impending budgetary deficit at some point. So it's since it's not that fiscal crisis, nothing's going to be really drastic in that first year. But we need to start planning for where can we make cuts, in terms of services, programs, materials, worst case scenario, looking at reducing hours and locations and staff. So we have a kind of plan, we have a plan to plan for that if that's the outcome. But it won't be really dramatic at first, since we are kind of far enough ahead of the issue right now when we're asking the voters to decide.
Or you could always go back to voters the next year and try it again.
We can certainly go back out to the voters, and that was certainly part of the calculus for what happens next.
So what are the innovations that libraries are looking at over the next several years that make it even different than what you're providing right now?
We see definitely a continued push into the digital resource direction. We've had downloadable ebooks, audiobooks for actually a decade now, and that usage over 10 years has increased 2,700%. So it's a huge area of growth for us. We want to use some of those levy funds to actually beef up that collection because the demand is so high. The challenge is that for a library, the cost of a digital book is actually more expensive than a physical book. So we want to balance out those costs and get more materials into your digital hands, so to speak. So an emphasis on digital resources, and then again, just looking for ways we can leverage partnerships to bring in kind of new and innovative learning opportunities for folks, for things they want to explore or learn themselves, for both entertainment and personal enrichment, but also for career growth and school opportunities.
So let me go back. Why is the cost to you of a digital book more expensive than a physical book?
I think it's just a kind of a case of how the market operates. So if you think about it, sort of a digital book, generally speaking, cannot deteriorate. So, physical books, at some point, they can be read out. At some point, a physical book will sort of cease to be functional, and we'll have to discard it and recycle it or give it away or something like that. But a digital book never kind of experiences that decline as a resource, right? So the market has determined that since they don't suffer that their cost is higher per unit than what we would for physical. And it can vary from publisher to publisher. For libraries, it's always different, but in some cases you could get 5 copies of a hardcover for the price of 1 digital copy. So it is a significant expense difference.
Patrick Rowe is the executive director of the Spokane County Library District, which has a property tax levy measure on the August 6th primary election ballot. It needs 50% plus one vote to be approved. There's no voter validation requirement. You can find out more about the measure at the library district's website. On Wednesday's podcast, we'll talk with two of the most powerful people in Spokane County who are not elected, Teresa Sanders, the administrator for the city of Spokane, and Jerry Gemmel, the CEO of Spokane County, talk about how their entities work together on a range of issues, including those where their elected officials disagree. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. I'm glad you joined us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.